As we continue our series, The Art of Neighboring, and maybe you say, I haven't been here in a few weeks, and we're now on week three of this series. So if you've missed something over the last few weeks, you can listen to these online at our website, calvarybelair.com. And also want to encourage you to check out our various means of social media on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. That video you saw earlier about our Community Fun Day, that's out on our YouTube channel. And so a great way to stay connected with Calvary from Sunday to Sunday is via social media so that you can know what's going on and stay connected each week. Well, last week, Pastor Larry brought you a message entitled The Time Barrier. And last week, you learned that love is spelt T-I-M-E. It takes time to show people love. Lack of time can definitely get in the way of us getting to know our neighbors, getting to know anybody for that matter. Well, today we're going to look at another factor. Another factor that can get in the way and impede this whole art of neighboring thing, and that's called the fear factor. The fear factor. Oftentimes this idea of getting to know new people can cause a lot of anxiety in our lives. If we're really honest, it can cause anxiety stepping outside of our comfort zones and actually getting to know the people around us. It can be awkward. Maybe you've got your own awkward stories. You see, I tried that and it was really weird, so I decided I'm never going to do it again. Maybe you trying to step out and get to know somebody, maybe it looked something like this.
There she is, George. They just go in there and invite her.
Okay, but I don't know what to say.
Well, just say anything, George. Say, well, whatever's natural. Well, the first thing that comes into your mind.
Nothing's coming to my mind.
George, it was a wonder I was even born.
What? What?
Nothing, nothing, nothing. Look, tell her destiny brought you together. Tell her that she is the most beautiful girl you've ever seen in the world. Girls like that stuff.
What are you doing, George? I'm writing this down. This is good stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Oh.
Let's go.
Oh.
Thank you.
We're ready. Lou? Give me a milk. Chocolate.
Density has brought me to you.
What?
Oh. What I meant to say was...
Wait a minute. Don't I know you from somewhere?
Yes. Yes. I'm George. George McFly. I'm your density. I mean, your destiny.
I hope your neighboring experiences haven't been that awkward. Maybe they're like that. I don't know. Some of you nodding your heads. But, you know, fear can keep us from stepping outside of our comfort zones. And so as we continue this series on the Art of Neighbor, I do want to call your attention to a couple of things in your info guide. Pull out your outline so you can follow along today, but also pull out your block map, your Who Is My Neighbor map. We've been challenging you, encouraging you to write down the names. That's you right there in the middle. That's where you live. Write down the names of your neighbors around you. Maybe that's a challenge. Maybe you realize, I don't even know their name. And so we encourage and challenge you as part of this series and beyond to begin to get to know things about your neighbors so that you can see yourself move from them being strangers to them being acquaintances to them being friends and neighbors. But you know, it's hard. And fear gets in the way, especially when the people around us, your neighborhood, your workplace, your classroom, when those people have just totally different lifestyles, when they've got totally different values than you, or totally different backgrounds, totally different family dynamics, it can get really difficult to get to know them. And fear can kind of creep up and keep us from doing that. But you know, the good news today is that we can find a pathway through our fears, a way to get beyond our fears and to connect with the people that God has strategically put in your path, but also that He has put you in their path and them in your path for a reason. It's not by accident you live around the people that you do. It's part of God's bigger purpose. So today in Luke chapter 7, which is where we're going to be, the Gospel of Luke chapter 7, and as you begin to follow along in your outline, here's the big idea. We're going to meet a woman today who didn't let fear keep her from expressing her love for Jesus. She's not going to let fear keep her from expressing her love for Jesus. And we're going to apply that to ourselves today as well, because we recognize that expressing Jesus' love can be downright scary. It can be awkward. It can seem risky. It can really just keep us, fear can keep us from stepping out and doing that. So the question before us this morning is this: how can I overcome that fear? How can I overcome that fear of expressing Jesus' love to the people around me? And from our text in Luke chapter 7, we're going to find that I can do this. I can overcome this fear by embracing three key truths. Three key truths we're going to pull from our text this morning about how I can overcome this fear. And kids, if you're following along on your outline this morning with the green clipboards, here's your big idea, kids. I can be a good neighbor. That's true for every one of us. I can be a good neighbor. Three key truths we want to embrace from our text. Here's number one. Number one, overcoming my fear first calls for remembering who I am in God's eyes. Remembering who I am in God's eyes. Let's begin with Luke chapter 7, verse number 36. Luke writes, "Then one of the Pharisees asked him," that's Jesus, "to eat with him. And he," Jesus, "went to the Pharisee's house and sat down to eat." So our text opens with this Pharisee, just think religious leader. That's a religious leader. He's inviting Jesus to come over to his house for dinner. In that day, in that culture, coming over for dinner was an honor. It's how you got to know somebody. It'd be like going out for coffee with somebody today, or going golfing or something with somebody today. That's a way of getting to know them. Now, these religious leaders were well known for opposing Jesus. So just because this guy invites Jesus over for dinner doesn't mean he's a big fan of Jesus. In fact, as you go back a few chapters in Luke's gospel, we're told a whole lot of things about these religious leaders and Jesus. We're told in chapter 5 they accuse him of lies. We're told also in chapter 5 that they complained because Jesus' followers were eating with sinners. We're told in chapter 6 that these religious leaders were filled with rage because Jesus healed somebody. Go figure. And then earlier in chapter 7, we're told that these religious people rejected the will of God. They're not a big supportive bunch. They're not big fans of Jesus. But notice Jesus goes to dinner anyway. He goes anyway. He's not afraid of the invite. He's not afraid to interact with a crowd of skeptics, a crowd of people that are not necessarily big fans of his. And then all of a sudden, right in the middle of this dinner at the religious leader's house, something totally unexpected happens. Look at verse 37. It says, "Behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask," that's just what it was made of, "a flask of fragrant oil." These are not very flattering words to describe this woman. Luke is very direct in his description. He calls her a woman in the city who was a sinner. Look at a couple of other translations. One says, "a certain immoral woman." Another says, "a woman in the town who lived a sinful life." Not exactly the caption you want underneath your picture in the high school yearbook, is it? Not very flattering. Now, if you stopped right there, you'd probably never peg this woman as being the hero of our story today. It would never come up because of her reputation in town. But notice her reputation didn't stop her. Her reputation, we're going to see, does not stopping this woman from coming to a dinner that she wasn't even invited to. Bible just says she heard Jesus was eating there. She heard Jesus was in this Pharisee's house. Now just stop and take that in for a minute. Remember who these religious leaders are. They're extremely judgmental, extremely self-righteous. Grace isn't even in their vocabulary. And all of a sudden, this woman is going to push through the threat, the risk of being judged, of being made fun of being taunted, of being rejected. None of that keeps her from her mission. None of that keeps her from openly expressing her love for Jesus. Why? How is that even possible? You see, this woman knew something. She knew something about her own identity, something that those religious leaders didn't know or certainly weren't willing to admit. You know, it's interesting that before I can be Jesus or you can be Jesus to the people around you, we first have to know who we are. We first have to understand and be confident in who we are, because folks, it doesn't do us anybody else any spiritual good. It doesn't do anybody else any eternal good for me to try to be Jesus to them when I don't have a grasp or a confidence in who I am in Jesus Christ. It doesn't do me any good. Now, I can fake being Jesus to people. I can throw a bunch of Bible verses at them and show them how much I know. We can start to, you know, put down certain groups of people, slam an anti-God culture, put people in categories, stay away from people that don't seem to be like Jesus people. We can do all that all we want, but guess what? People around us are smarter than that. They're smarter than that. They recognize, they see right through our charades, right through our hypocrisy, overcoming the fear of getting to know my neighbor doesn't start with understanding who they are. It's got to start with understanding who I am. Who I am in Jesus Christ. Look what this woman does in verse number 38. It says she stood at his feet behind him. Remember, they didn't use chairs around a table in those days. The table was down low. They'd recline on their elbows and let their feet sit out behind them. So she came up behind him, stood at his feet weeping, and she began to wash his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet and anointed them with the fragrant oil. Now, some of this might sound really odd to us today here in the 21st century, but a lot of these things that she's doing were quite customary in that day. Like foot washing was a common courtesy in that day when a guest came into your home. But don't forget, this isn't her house. This isn't even her house. It's a Pharisee's house, that religious leader. So look at how the religious guy who owns the house responded to what this woman is extending toward Jesus. Look in verse 39. Now, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he spoke to himself. Keep that in mind. He's saying this in his mind. This man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what manner of woman this is who's touching him, for she is a sinner. He's thinking, you know what, if this Jesus really was all he thinks he is, all he's cracked up to be by his followers, he would never, ever, ever let this sinful, despicable, disgusting, immoral woman touch him ever. That would never, ever happen. The Pharisee sees this woman only as a filthy sinner. Well, Jesus, of course, knows what he's thinking because Jesus is God. And so Jesus now takes the opportunity to call him out on it. And look what he does. He's going to call him out for his lack of hospitality. Look at verse 40. He says, Simon, watch out when Jesus uses your first name. That's a problem. Simon, I've got something to say to you. He says, teacher, say it. Say it, bring it. Yeah, it's okay. I'm all ears, he's saying. So Jesus says, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story, verse 41. There's a certain creditor, a lender, who had two debtors, two borrowers. One owed 500 denarii, that was just a currency of the day, and the other owed 50. And when they had nothing with which to repay, he freely, the lender, forgave them both. Tell me, which of the borrowers will love the lender more? So Jesus is saying, hey, for all intents and purposes, one guy borrows 50 bucks, one guy borrows 10 times that, 500 bucks. At the end of the day, neither could repay a dime. And this lender, being so gracious, says, you are both forgiven 100% of your debt. Okay, Simon, which of those two lenders, borrowers, the one who borrowed 50 or the one who borrowed 500, which of those are going to love this lender more? Well, Simon in verse 43 says, I suppose, he's not totally committing to his answer, but he says, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. Jesus says, very good, Simon. Excellent, excellent answer. You're so smart. Simon has no idea. He's walking right into Jesus' trap. No idea. He's been set up. Walked right into it. He's trying to teach him that this woman refused to let her fear keep her from expressing her love for Jesus. Why? Because she already knew she had been forgiven very, very, very much. She could never repay Jesus. Pouring that oil was not an attempt at payback. That was an expression of love. Why? Because this woman no longer defines herself like Simon defines her. This woman no longer defines her as self, as sinner, as filthy, as disgusting, as despicable. She took that label off. If she still wore that label, she'd have stayed home. She never would have stepped out. She'd have stood outside. She never would have come in. Instead, she pushed past the fear. She pushed right past it. Why? She knew Jesus cured her of her past. She knew that Jesus cleansed her of her immoral reputation. She knew Jesus gave her a brand spanking new identity. She's a sinner no more. She's forgiven and free. Here's the application. Don't let fear cause you to forget who you are. Don't let fear get in the way and cause you to forget who you are. If you're not confident in your own forgiveness through Jesus Christ, if you don't recognize your own transformed life, that doesn't mean you're perfect. It means you're forgiven. If you're not recognizing your own personal relationship with Jesus Christ for what it is, you can never expect to effectively connect with neighbors who know Jesus, need to know Jesus. Doesn't mean you have it all together. Doesn't mean you don't have struggles. But if I'm walking around in my neighborhood or my workplace or my classroom and I'm very, very tentative about my Christian life, if I'm always gloom and doom, if I'm always a glass half full guy or half empty, then you know what? I don't have anything to offer my neighbor who's looking for hope in his marriage, who's looking for help in raising his kids, who's looking for the ability to overcome an addiction or rebuild a broken past. Because you know what our neighbors do? You know what your coworkers do? They look out the window. Your neighbor's looking out the window and they're seeing those Christians across the street. You know, they're seeing the honk if you love Jesus bumper sticker. And they're saying, you know what? That guy's always negative. That guy never seems to be positive. That guy doesn't even want to be involved in my life. That guy doesn't even know my name. They see right through it. Our neighbors see right through it. When I'm unsure about who I am, then the people around me, they just know something doesn't smell right. Overcoming my fear calls for remembering who I am in God's eyes. There's a second truth we want to embrace from our text this morning. Overcoming my fear also calls for recognizing the opportunities that God puts in my path. Recognizing the opportunities that God puts in my path. Beginning in verse number 44, he, that's Jesus, notice this now, turns toward the woman but says to Simon. So he's kind of glancing toward the woman, but he's speaking to Simon. And in verse 44, he says, do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet. Again, a customary thing to do for a guest in that day. But she
has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. You gave me no kiss. That was customary, even amongst men in that day and still is in the Middle East today. You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Jesus now quickly moves. He starts jockeying from praising Simon. Remember, Simon, great, you got the right answer to my story. And now he starts slamming Simon for his lack of hospitality, for being so judgmental about this woman. And he asks a very direct yet simple question. Simon, do you see this woman? Do you see her? He's not saying, Simon, do you recognize she's in the room? Oh no, he's going much deeper than that. He's saying, Simon, you're acting like this woman doesn't even exist, while at the same time you claim to be super religious Pharisee guy. You're claiming to be that kind of guy, and yet you're pretending she doesn't even exist. That's hypocrisy, Simon. That's a charade, Simon. So Jesus turns this scene totally on its head. He says, Mr. Host, Mr. Super Pharisee, you didn't even treat me like a guest in your own house. But this woman, she's been washing my feet with her tears. You didn't even give me a kiss on the cheek, which is fairly customary in this culture. But this woman that you're so grossed out by, she's been kissing my feet since I came in, saying, Simon, you might know that this woman is physically here, but do you see her as a human being? Do you see her as a real person? Simon, do you see that she's acting far more like a hostess than you're acting like a host? And Simon, last I checked, this isn't even her house. Folks, in order to be neighbors to the people around us, we have to actually see the people around us. To see them as valuable. To see them as worth something in God's eyes. Instead of only seeing people's faults, instead of only publicly or privately judging them for their sin, of only adding up what's wrong with them or what they need to change or what they need to clean up in their own lives, instead of seeing what God sees, it's real easy to see people as obstacles to be avoided rather than opportunities to show love. How many of you ever seen the Discovery Channel show Man versus Wild with Bear Grylls? Anyone ever see that show, Man versus Wild? If you haven't seen it, it's about a guy. He's a survivalist guy from Britain. And what he does is they put him in these crazy situations where he tries to teach the viewer how to survive in tough outdoor situations. Well, in one particular episode, a helicopter literally drops him into the frigid waters off an uninhabited island near Scotland. Bear manages somehow to get to shore, and then he shows us what to do next. Take a look.
I've been all the way around this now. It's definitely an island. That is the mainland.
With little food and no fresh water here, getting to the mainland is the best survival strategy. But with a life raft wrecked beyond repair, you're gonna have to swim. In these freezing waters, you'd need all the insulation you can get, which gives me an idea for that seal carcass.
But what these guys do have is an amazing ability to survive in really cold water. And that's because of its skin, a thick layer of blubber underneath. I might well be able to make some sort of wetsuit out of that. It's going to help me on this swim across there. It's going to be a bit of a squeeze. Well, that is the ultimate sealskin wetsuit.
I've done everything I can now to face a long, cold swim in these frigid Atlantic waters.
Now, I don't know about you, but if I were on that island, the one thing I would absolutely avoid getting anywhere near would be a seal carcass. That would totally gross me out. So what is it? What could Bear Grylls see that I could never see. Bear sees the big picture. He sees the big picture. His mission is to survive. So when he looks around him on that island, rather than letting fear drive him to avoid stuff, instead he's driven by the goal of survival. So when he looks around, he sees everything around him as incredibly valuable and as opportunities to reach his mission to survive. Imagine, folks, imagine if instead of letting our fear keep us from getting to know the people around us, imagine instead if we were motivated by the goal of being Jesus to the people that we see, of being Jesus to the people in our path, of taking opportunities to show the love of Jesus rather than seeing people as obstacles to avoid. Just imagine how our neighborhoods could be transformed. Just imagine how our relationships could expand, how our lives could become intertwined with the people around us, how God's love could spread and God's mission could expand. Folks, we saw that last week with the Community Fund Day. You showed incredible love to the people around us. Didn't that feel good? Didn't that feel great? When you did that and you saw that and you went out and you did that naturally. But you had to see people. Simon, do you see this woman? Notice Jesus didn't give her the label that Simon gave her. He didn't call her a sinner. He called her a woman. She's not an object to be ignored. She's a person to be respected. Jesus humanized her. He's trying to show Simon that she's someone of worth, someone of value, someone who matters. Folks, the people around us matter to God. People around us matter to God. Our neighbors matter to God, even if they don't share our values, even if they don't share our priorities, even if they don't share our way of doing life, they still matter to God. But here's the fear. Here's the fear. Pastor Mike, if I get involved with neighbors that I don't know follow Jesus, I might be tempted by the lifestyle they're involved in. Or worse yet, Pastor Mike, if I get involved, what if I go out to dinner, if I'm out for coffee, or I'm out golfing, or whatever, with a neighbor that people know their life just isn't quite very godly? What might happen if I'm seen associating? All of a sudden, people might look at me, and they might associate me with that lifestyle. Or they might call my own Christianity into question. Could that happen? Nod your heads. Yes, it could. That could happen. Getting involved with our neighbors is messy, time-consuming, risky. And maybe you say today, I'm not sure I want to take that risk. But let me tell you, there's no indication in our passage that Jesus was the least bit worried about taking Simon up on his offer to come to dinner with a bunch of skeptics. And that didn't change when a woman known as a sinner in town walks in and touches him physically. A huge no-no in that day. That didn't faze Jesus one single bit. So what can we learn about how Jesus interacted with people that we can apply to our interactions today? Well, here's the application. See people around you as opportunities to show love. Just see people that way. Ask God for a new set of eyes, a new lens through which to view people. And you know what? Here's what it takes. We've got to remember as we do this that showing love is not about trying to preserve my own personal status. If I'm trying to preserve status, I'm not going to take the risk. I'm not going to step out and love the people around me. Showing love is about being Jesus's personal representatives wherever he has placed you. That doesn't mean we don't use wisdom. It doesn't mean we don't use discernment. But it does mean that we don't let fear keep us from showing love. It's worth overcoming our fears. It's worth other people perhaps questioning your spirituality. Remember, this whole study that we're doing on the art of neighboring, this whole study is based on a question Jesus was asked back in Matthew chapter 22. Remember, Jesus was asked, again, another chance to trip him up. He was asked a question, and that question was, Jesus, what is the greatest commandment? And remember what Jesus said. He said, well, it goes like this. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second, he said, is like that. The second is love your neighbor. Love your neighbor. Notice that Matthew 22, 39, I don't know if you look in your Bible, but my Bible, Matthew 22, 39, doesn't come with a bunch of footnotes, doesn't come with a bunch of asterisks, a bunch of get out of jail free cards that say something like, you know what? Only love your neighbor when they're just like you. Or only love your neighbor when they don't swear. Or only love your neighbor when they don't have offensive bumper stickers on their car. Only when they don't use God's name in vain. Only love your neighbor when they have the same background as you, the same morals as you, the same values as you. No, it says love your neighbor without footnotes. Unconditional love. How do we do this? We keep the bigger purpose in mind. Just like Bear Grylls on that island had the purpose of survival, we keep in mind the purpose of being salt and light to the people around us. And when we do that, we have our eyes wide open to the opportunities that God puts in our paths. Three truths to embrace from our passage. Remembering who I am in God's eyes, recognizing the opportunities in our paths, and finally this morning, refusing to believe anyone is beyond God's forgiveness. Refusing to believe anyone is beyond God's forgiveness. It's not till we get to the end of the passage that we find out for sure that this woman has previously had her sin forgiven. Verse 47, I want you to see this in a different translation. Jesus says, I tell you her sins, and they're many. Now at this point, stop for a minute when Jesus is speaking. Her sins, and they're many. Can you picture the crowd of religious leaders going, preach it, amen. Oh, there are many. Oh, we know her reputation. And then Jesus says, have been forgiven. Woo, silence in the room. So, or because of that, she has shown me much love. But a person who's forgiven little shows only a little love. Wink, wink, Simon. That's what Jesus is getting at here. Why? Because Simon still viewed her as a sinner. But Jesus adds the shocker. She is forgiven. But he makes it clear her actions didn't buy her forgiveness. No, don't get that backwards. Don't think that pouring out that expensive oil on Jesus was somehow payback or somehow earning her salvation or her forgiveness. Don't get that backwards. The Bible is clear that no amount of good works can earn the forgiveness of God. Paul says it this way in Ephesians chapter 2. Paul says, for by grace, that's a free gift of God, you've been saved through faith. That's trust. It is the gift of God, not of works. Basically, Jesus is, I can picture him with his hand on Simon say, hey, look at this woman showing so much love. Hey, Simon, that's what forgiven people do. That's what forgiven people do, Simon. They express their love toward me and toward others. And then in case there was any confusion about her status, Jesus turns directly to the woman in verse 48, and he says, your sins are forgiven. Your sins are forgiven. She already knew it. He didn't do it for her sake. He did it for the sake of the judgmental crowd standing around, the one snickering at her all this time, reminding them that this immoral, despicable person in your mind, she has received the grace of God. Are there people in your neighborhood, people in your life, people in your circle, maybe it's in your family, in your office, that maybe in your mind, they're beyond the forgiveness of God? You maybe know what they've done, or you know how they live, and maybe in your mind, they're beyond the reach of the forgiveness and the grace of God. Maybe there's groups of people, classes of people that you write off, that you categorize, thinking there's no way God would want to forgive them. Absolutely no way. They're just blatant sinners. Folks, it doesn't matter how mean someone is. It doesn't matter how rebellious they are. It doesn't matter how gossipy they are, sexually immoral they are, addicted, abusive, greedy. There's always, always, always hope for forgiveness in Jesus Christ. That is the gospel. That's the gospel in a nutshell. So the question for us is this: will my fear keep me from living in such a way that my neighbors actually believe that I believe this gospel? Here's the application. Refuse to label people as being beyond God's grace. Refuse to label people as being beyond God's grace. Simon called her sinner. Jesus called her forgiven. When I label someone as beyond God's grace, I remove personal responsibility to love them, because I look at them as already lost cause. Don't do that. Our obligation to love includes all people. Back in the late 1800s, there was a guy by the name of Charles Bowles. He was a professional stagecoach robber. Back in the Wild West days, he robbed nearly 30 stagecoaches in the late 1800s. He actually went by the nickname Black Bart. Amazingly enough, Black Bart did all these robberies without firing a single shot. In fact, he was known to be so nonviolent in his criminality that when he was finally caught, the police report read like this. It said, quote, Bowles is, quote, a person of great endurance. He exhibited genuine wit under the most trying circumstances and was extremely proper and polite in his behavior, and he avoids profanity. What an upstanding citizen he was. How could he be so successful and never fire a shot? Here's what he said from prison. He said, all he had to do was use fear to paralyze his victims. He said, quote, fear, the face of the unknown, was my weapon of choice, my weapon of intimidation. Folks, fear is still Satan's weapon of choice to the Christian. Satan wants us to fear getting involved in people's lives, but don't let fear paralyze you. Don't let fear rob you of the opportunity of being Jesus, of showing his love to the people around you and letting yourself get involved in other people's lives. That's what the art of neighboring calls for. It calls for a willingness to get down in the trenches, to get messy, to let it take your time, to let it take your energy, because we need and we're called to get down in the trenches with that divorced mom or that widowed mom trying to make her way through life now alone. He puts us in the trenches with that couple who's now estranged, and you know it. They're on your street, they're in your workplace, and they're not getting along, and maybe you're there to maybe help them to at least talk it out. Maybe you're there to be an ear to that man or woman who just got the cancer diagnosis or just heard about the job loss. That's what it means to neighbor. But maybe we say, but they don't know Jesus, so what am I going to say? Folks, even people who don't know Jesus, losing a job still hurts. A divorce still hurts. A cancer diagnosis still hurts. Because even though someone doesn't know Jesus, they're still humans loved by God. That's what it means to neighbor. Don't let fear get in the way. As we come to our time of response this morning, maybe right now God's bringing someone to your mind. They may be in your neighborhood. They may be in your workplace. Maybe in your classroom. It may be in your home, maybe a family member or an extended family member. Maybe as you look right now, you say, I have not been willing to step out and get involved in their lives. I've let fear bring a whole bunch of excuses and put them in my path that I'm able to wash my hands of getting involved in their lives. Maybe today you say, God, forgive me for that, but give me another chance. God, give me another chance. Give me a way that I can step out. It might be awkward. Fear is going to try to detract you, but you can push through that, just like this woman in our text did. just a moment. We're going to have our time of response. And that'll be your opportunity. If you want to come up and pray for that individual or pray for your own strength or pray for something else, feel free to come up here. We'll pray with you. You want to pray on your own, pray with somebody nearby, whatever you feel led to do this morning. But don't leave here with regret, without making a decision that God's calling you to make. Let's bow our heads and pray, and then we'll respond.